This is episode number 514 with Wilmer Valderrama.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
If you're not having any fun, then you're definitely doing something wrong. I am super pumped about this episode and interview with the one and only Wilmer Valderrama. And for those that don't know who he is, he's an American actor, singer, producer, and television personality, best known for the role Fez in that sitcom, That 70s Show. And he's done many other shows, including American Horror television series From Dusk Till Dawn. He was also the host of the MTV series Yo Mama and voiced a character of Manny in the children's show Handy Manny in 2006 to 2012 and had recurring roles on Grey's Anatomy and NCIS. But more than his fame of TV and acting, producing, he is the spokesperson for the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute and is the founder of their Ready to Lead program, which educates and empowers the Latino youth. He also works with President Obama's Organization for Action campaign on future events involving immigration reform and education. I really love this interview because it's all about dreams, possibilities, what's possible that we can create in our lives, and the mindset that is necessary in order for us to achieve these things. And in this interview, we talk about what Wilmer learned about an opportunity while growing up in Venezuela and moving here in his young teen years to the United States, and the biggest advantage he had by being an immigrant and coming here. We also talk about how he cultivated fearless confidence as an actor, even when he didn't understand English at the time. Why you should fear success over your failures. We also talk about what Johnny Depp told him that shifted everything in his career when he was at the top, and how becoming an activist has changed his perspective on his acting career and his future. I am super pumped about this one. And if you enjoy this one, make sure you're sharing it out because it is a powerful lesson, powerful story that I think we could all resonate with. So make sure to share it out right now, lewishowes.com/514. Tag me at Lewis Howes and Wilmer Valderrama over on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And let us both know what you enjoyed the most and took away from this interview while listening to it.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of body plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all 4.5-inch body plants are on sale through May 5th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
And again, big thank you to our sponsors, but I'm so excited about this interview and this episode. And without further ado, let me introduce to you the one, the only, Wilmer Valderrama. Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness podcast. We've got the legendary Wilmer Valderrama in the house. Thank you so much,
Thank you, man. Thank you so much for having me, man.
Excited that you're here. Mutual friend Andrew Sandler connected us, and he said, you got to have you on. He said, you're one of the most inspiring guys he knows.
Oh, that's nice.
So I said, all right. I actually didn't know much about you. You know, I don't think I've watched much of your stuff. Obviously, 70s show, I watched a few little moments here and there, but I was not like a big fan of the show. Not that I wasn't a fan, but I was
No,
just
I
like,
get it. Yeah, man.
And I was like, all right, I want to learn more. So I was like having Andrew kind of tell me more about you, but I was like, if he recommended it, and I know you're friends with Scooter and a bunch of other mutual friends that we have. So I was like, I'm sure he's more than just a character on a show. So I'm excited you're here. I appreciate you being
Thank
here.
Thank you. No, and vice versa. I'm excited to, you know, to be on your show. I really appreciate what you're trying to do with, you know, with the simpleness and of a philosophy that works for anyone who's listening. Yeah. You know, I think it's inspiring to share your stories. I think that, you know, today the education we need the most is peer-to-peer, right? The education we need the most is having, you know, young people share their stories and having those stories create their own personal philosophy and how to navigate life in the most effortless way possible. And I think that if you're doing this on every podcast basis, I think that you're moving the needle on making it a better place.
That's the goal, man. Connect the human race and help people live their best lives. That's what we're all about. So now I'm curious, you grew up in LA for a few years, then you moved away to another country. Is that right?
Yeah. So what happened is my mother and my father met in Miami, and when they got married there, and they had my sister and I in Miami. We were born in Miami, and when I turned 3 years old, you know, back then the dollar and El Bolívar, which is the national coin in Venezuela, was actually very close.
Really?
You know, so because Venezuela is the number one reserve oil in the world and was one of the richest countries when it comes to natural resources, so they were exporting, a very, very influential amount on a global scale.
Right.
So the agricultural industry was booming because they were exporting, you name it, right? Yeah. And my dad, you know, found passion in the agriculture industry, and he decided that it was time to move back to Venezuela for business, and we went back to work, you know? And also, he's Venezuelan. My mother is Colombian, you know? So they went back to what they knew, you know? And living in America was amazing at the time. But, you know, they went back to their roots. Right. And so they brought my sister and I into Venezuela, and we were raised in Venezuela, probably a third in Colombia, most of the time in Venezuela.
Sure.
And so we were raised in Venezuela until I was about 13 and change, almost 14 years old. And around that time, the country politically and economically was showing signs. You know, there was flags being thrown on the field.
It's crazy right now.
I mean, and the point is that I saw the start of the evolution of the deconstruction of a country that was so influential in South America.
Yeah.
And so my dad saw the first, national coup, and when it didn't succeed, the first one didn't succeed, and it was led by a young military guy named Hugo Chavez. Mm-hmm. And my dad said, okay, guys, this is not looking really good. Corruption is taking a toll on the economy. Corruption is taking a toll on the last 10 years of growth. And my parents decided it was time to come back to the United States. And really the reason why we came back was to, and I quote from my dad, to say, mijo, get the education that I never had. Mm-hmm. To me, that was really significant. And that was something that I was told when I was 13. And so when I came to the United States, I felt like that was my job. My actual full-time job was to get the education my parents never had an opportunity to have.
And you didn't speak English then, or did you?
I didn't even know how to speak English. In fact, this is the thing that sucked the most about it. Because my dad was like, okay. So here's what happened. So I was, in Venezuela and in Latin America, they make you take an English class. Mm. And if you don't have an interest in English class, it's okay for you to flunk it.
Right.
You failed it, and I was failing all my English classes. And then my dad literally 1 month tells me, okay, Marilyn, Stephanie, Wilmer, we're moving back to the United States. I go, huh? Because I literally, at this point, I was always saying to myself, I'm never going to have to need how to speak English. Like, I live in Venezuela. I speak Spanish over here. Why would I ever learn how to speak English? I'm never going to go to America. We'll cut to packing our bags and having to relocate to the United States and knowing that the first thing I had to do was learn how to speak English and be the first one in my family to speak English.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where did you guys move? Right to LA? Were you back to Miami?
So we were in Miami for a couple of weeks, and fairly quickly we realized that there was really not much for us there. My dad had a brother.
How many jobs there?
I mean, it's, you know, my dad, it just literally, it was not necessarily what my dad wanted for us. You know, we drove cross country, got to know the country on a different level, you know, seeing the American flag everywhere was so eye opening. You know, it's just, you knew it was a land of the opportunity, you know, and we went all the way to Los Angeles, and when we got to Los Angeles.
Why LA?
Well, my dad had a brother here.
Okay.
One of his brothers had a little a rental car place, you know, close to LAX.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, come out here, stay with us, you know, for, you know, a couple of weeks, 6 weeks or whatever. So while you get it together and get a job and do your thing. My dad said, okay, perfect. And we landed in Los Angeles. Well, we drove into Los Angeles and we went to stay with my uncle and his wife and a couple of my cousins. And, you know, the point was that my dad had sold everything he had in Venezuela so we can have enough capital to establish a life out here without having to really struggle with it.
Right.
And being at my uncle's house for a couple of weeks, maybe like 2-3 months or something, was going to help him really slowly really get the right house and those different things and help him get enough of a job so he can have at least a month of income, you know. Well, weekend, that really went south.
Right.
It was not going to work. You know, my mom and my uncle's wife just did not get along. Mm. And there was something terrible and really bad that happened between them. And we were just like, okay, we should move out, you know. And really what happened was, you know, if I can be just super open and raw about it, you know, my parents were helping with the groceries too, you know. So... You know, I went to open the refrigerator. It was so stupid. It was so silly. But I opened the refrigerator and I got a popsicle. And my uncle's wife grabbed the popsicle off my hand, put it back in, and said, "That's not for you." And my mom just lost her mind. Like, lost her mind. I've never seen my mom black out, you know? And we're calling my dad and my uncle and like, hey, da-da-da-da. And we're like 13 years old, 14 years old. We're like, what do we do?
Right.
And, you know, my parents came and he was like, you know, we have to figure it out. So we got into a hotel, you know, and then during that hotel stay, you know, my dad was, you know, obviously burning some cash to try to keep us going, you know. And then eventually we got this little tiny house in Van Nuys, you know, in Van Nuys, California, and got a house. It was like a 2-bedroom little house where the living room and the kitchen and the dining room was all in one space, you know, and we had a nice tiny little backyard. My sister and I share one room, and my younger sister was sleeping in the same room with my parents. So, and that was the beginning. That was how we just kind of got, you know, kind of got established out here.
Wow. What, were you acting before that or into entertainment or producing or singing before this or?
Well, back in Venezuela, I lived in a very small town. I'm talking like, I don't know, 19,000 people, right? And spread out in two little zip codes that were basically so small that were pretty much considered a city. You know, it was called Acarigua and Araure. So when people talked about the Estado Portuguesa's, you know, Acarigua and Araure, they'd be like, where are you from? They'd be like, Acarigua, Araure, you know, because it was this small little town. Mm-hmm. Went to school there. But they only have one movie theater all year round. And they have one movie theater, and they only play one movie all year round.
One movie,
and it was
a whole year.
Yeah, and it was RoboCop. Huh. And I would watch RoboCop in English, and they had the subtitles.
Sure.
But I would watch RoboCop, and every time I started watching RoboCop, I'm like, "Oh, this is so cool! It's so fun!" You know, and I was a huge fan of the bad guy in it, and that's relevant because I come full circle to it, you know. But there was nothing to do, so. Performing arts is something that's big in Latin America, you know, and in Venezuela, it's also even more serious, you know. So I enrolled into these classes and I started doing singing, dancing, and acting. And I started doing a lot of theater. And but I was doing it since I was 6 years old. So when I came to the United States, I felt like the one thing that was going to improve my speaking skills and was going to force me to read and force me to speak out loud and like, you know, and kind of break out of that show was to go back to theater.
Really?
So I went back to theater not even really knowing how to speak English, And I think my first character was playing the Beast in Beauty and the Beast in junior high. And here's why that's really funny. It's because I didn't have any lines. So I basically, my teacher would literally recite the Beast's lines off stage. And I would just mime as if I was speaking.
Perfect.
So it was the easiest job, but the funnest too. I'm like the Beast, you know, I'm the Beast and Beauty and the Beast. And, you know, and the whole time I'm like, someone is speaking for me off camera, and I'm just pretending off camera, off stage, pretending that, like, you know, I'm the one saying it. Right, but that was my first acting thing.
That's funny.
Because I really didn't know how to speak English, but I wanted to be in theater. Right. And the teacher was kind enough to let me in there. Not knowing I couldn't even read a script.
Right, right. That's cool. So you got back into it pretty much right away. And being in LA is probably like different opportunities here to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think mostly what happened was for me was, you know, it was just, the more I did theater, the better my English became.
Right.
And the faster I learned how to communicate. And then fairly quickly, I realized that knowing how to speak English was the only weapon I needed in order to go out there and defend myself and conquer, right? As soon as, like, English was part of my utility belt, I knew that absolutely anything can happen now.
Really?
Because if I could learn how to speak a crazy language like this at 14, 15 years old, I'm going to be unstoppable. You know? And that kind of happened. You know, I mean, did a lot of theater. And then at some point, the teacher said to me, you know, hey, you know, you're pretty funny. You should give it a try. You know, and I said, well, maybe I should give it a try because I don't even know how to start. You know, so she told me doing a couple of commercials here and there. And, you know, you make some money and stuff. And I sold it to my dad as like, Dad, I have good grades. So if I keep continuing my good grades, can you take me to some auditions?
Yeah.
And my dad said, Mijo, you, my dad always sounded like he was drunk. Like, if you want to do it, it's okay. It's okay. But Ace. That's what he wanted. It was Ace. I was like, okay, Dad. So I was kind of a pretty good student.
That's good.
But yeah, so that's kind of how I started.
And what was the first kind of big break, I guess, before the 70s show? Was there like a big commercial or something else that you got through? Like, oh, I can do this and I can like keep going. And
so I think it was my theater experience in high school that made me feel like I can get used to this. Like I'm having a lot of fun. Maybe I should do more theater.
Yeah.
I knew this. I wasn't thinking I was going to be in the commercials and the movies and TVs. Like my ambition was to, you know, was to just kind of continue to do theater because I was, you know, I wanted to be a pilot for the Air Force, you know? And if not, I wanted to be a psychologist. You know, I just wanted to like study minds and help people and all that.
Wow.
And then, you know, they said to me, the teacher said to me, hey, listen, you know, I think you should go out and audition and stuff, you know? And I had met this drama teacher outside of my high school named Celeste Boyd. And Celeste, honestly, is the reason why I confidently said, I'm going to be the best at this. I'm going to be the best at anything I do will be remembered. Like, she was the one that kind of groomed me. And she said, hey, I want to teach you... I want to bring you to my acting class at Wednesdays.
She's a pretty well known, right? I feel like I've heard that name.
Celeste, I mean, if you're in the industry, you know who she is.
Yeah, I've heard her name.
She is she's someone that iconically has helped so many people too.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
And I hope that she continues. She's still doing it because she's an amazing woman. But
So she brought you into her class.
She brought me into her class,
and
I said, I can't pay for it. I was about 16. I was about 16 years old. I said, by the way, I can't pay for it. I have no money. And she's like, no, I want to teach it for free.
Wow.
And I said, wow, that's amazing. I said, can I bring my sister? She's like, okay, you can bring your sister. My sister and I did everything together. And she, you know, in her class, it was 40-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 20-year-olds, you know, and as a 16-year-old, just trying to do scenes to learn from all these awesome actors that were older than me was great practice. Then she introduced me to an agent. The agent said, I'm not gonna represent you, but I'm gonna take you out and see what kind of feedback we get. Right?
It's kind of like representing, right? I mean,
kind of, but it's like probation.
Without committing.
Yeah. It's like a probation way of representing somebody. So, you know, so he sent me on this Doritos commercial.
Oh.
And they called him and he says, look, the kid is awesome. Like, he's really, really good. He's really funny. But he has a crazy accent. And we cannot take him because Latinos on television shouldn't have an accent. And this was back in 96 or so. So they've, but just know the kid is really good. And agent's like, all right, cool. So he sent me on another commercial, which I got, literally the second commercial I got.
Wow.
Which was a Pacific Bell's Marja LuPages commercial. It was a regional commercial.
Pagers?
Pages. Like pages. The yellow pages.
Gotcha.
So it was the Pacific Bell's Marja LuPages.
Uh-huh.
And it was original. It was for California. Mm. And it was in Spanish.
Perfect.
It's perfect. And I had the irony is that the only line in the commercial was the Pacific Bell's Marginal Pages. And he had to speak Spanish at all in the commercial. But it was very nice. They had my fake family. And I was like, well, I got a fake family. It's my fake dad, my fake mom, it's my fake sister. This is crazy. And then so I went in there.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life. So don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And I did the commercial, it was awesome. And with that money, I paid my dues and I became a Screen Actors Guild member. I became a SAG member. And then he's like, okay, you know, send you a couple of other things. And I started booking things back to back to back because I was having so much fun. Like,
there's
I wasn't scared. I wasn't scared. Like, this.
I have to get this.
That's right. Yeah. The audition, I didn't depend on that audition. So, I started booking job after job. And then I remember, and this is the part that's the most significant to me in my life. I remember there was a time where, when I was about to turn 18 years old. And it's about almost 2 years into me auditioning and stuff and getting little commercials here and there, little spots, and still doing theater in school. My dad was running errands for this mechanic shop. So he would bring parts over and that's how he would get paid for these errands. And, you know, he did that for a couple other places. And, you know, he would get in there and try to, you know, get with the mechanic shops and stuff. And I remember that one night, there's a little commotion in the house, 2 a.m. in the morning. And I see my mom and my dad scuffling in the living room. And I say, what's going on? I get up. And I asked my dad, what happened? And my dad said to me, they stole our car. Mm. And if you know anything about anything in Los Angeles, if you don't have a car, I mean, it's like...
Can't get anywhere.
You can't get anywhere. And my dad's complete hustle, like, relied on that car. Mm. And my dad is really worried. My mom is crying. And I just, at like 15 years old, like... you know, I looked at my dad, 15, 16 years old. So I looked at my dad and I said, "Dad, don't worry, because, you know, I'm going to be this famous actor, and I'm going to be a famous actor, and I'm going to produce, I'm going to direct, and I'm going to have these companies, I'm going to have restaurants, and I'm going to have all these businesses, and we're never going to have to worry about this, and I'm going to buy us a house." And my dad looked at me and he said, "Okay, mijo, you can do that." And it was, to me, it felt like he gave me permission to do it.
Wow.
When he said, "You can do that," I feel like in that moment, I feel like my dad has said, "Go ahead, you can do that. While I figure out this car situation, you go ahead and become what you want to become."
Wow.
So I went the next day, I went to school, and we walked to school the next day. And I got to school, and I hit the books extra harder. And every time I got on stage, I was performing louder than anybody else, and I would eat everyone's meal. And I was like, this is mine. And he, you know, and then this teacher said, "Man, let's take you to the advanced class. You want to?" And so I was helping producing the plays. And then at some point, I wasn't even supposed to say this, but my drama teacher will go on her own auditions and will leave me teaching drama.
Wow.
So it was like, I was like so into it. It's like, this is going to work, you know? And, but I also, and like in the afternoons, I would play with my Salvadorian, Mexican, you know, I was in a soccer league. So people always wonder, "You were in the country for so long, how do you still have an accent?" And I go, "Well, because I played soccer with, you know, with Mexicans and Salvadorians and Guatemaltecos and, you know, every day." And I feel like that's the reason my sister has zero accent, because she had a bunch of white girlfriends that would go to the mall all the time. And she would say the word "like" a lot, you know. But anyhow, fast forward. That happened. I told my dad that. And I remember, you know, kept auditioning and stuff. And at the worst time of our lives, my agent sends me on this audition. It's my first pilot audition. And he said, "Here's the sites, go and audition." I go in, have a meeting, audition. They called me back, again. Then they said, "Hey, we're going to bring you back to producers." And I go, "Oh, I'm getting a call back. That's great." But in my mind, I'm like, this is mine.
Wow.
I'm getting this pilot. I'm getting this pilot. It's my first pilot ever. And I went to the last audition, and they told me, just have a little more fun with it. It's very cool. So I went in, audition. You know, first of all, they bring you a contract. You know, when you go to network auditions, they bring you a contract, and they go, "Hey, listen, you were going to make, I think, $15,000 for the pilot. And if it goes to series, you're going to make $10,000 per episode." And
that's a lot of money back then.
Are you kidding me?
I was like, 17 year old, you're like,
more, that was like more money that we made in the year.
Yeah.
So I looked to my dad and I said, "Dad, could you imagine if I get this? Could you imagine if I get this right now? Like, even if it doesn't go to series, it's gonna really help us, you know?" And my dad said to me, without missing a beat, he said to me, "Mijo, if you get it, very good. If you don't get it, very good." And I said, "Okay, very good." And I walked in and I just auditioned stress-free, because I knew if I got it, awesome. If I didn't get it, awesome too. We're back to the drawing board, you know. I go home. My agent calls me and says, "Hey, good news. They want you to come back tomorrow." And I told my dad, "Hey, Dad." And everyone's on the phone, like, listening. I said, "Hey, Dad. We got a call back. We're really close." And then the agent says, they want you to come back tomorrow, and the day after that, and the day after that, and the day after that, and the day after that. And everyone's like crying and going crazy. And we're like, "Jesus Christ, what just happened? Lord, thank you so much."
Wow.
And then that moment, I looked out, saw the American flag, and I said, "This is what it's about. How much more can I do? How much more can I go? How harder can I go?" You know? And I said to myself that everything I did in this pilot was going to be the most memorable. I said to myself, this is everything that comes out of my mouth. I'm going to work and nobody's going to fire me from this job. Mm-hmm. All I kept saying is, I don't want to get fired. I went in, did the pilot. Maybe like a month later, I get a phone call from my agent again. Says, "Hey, listen, congratulations. Good news and bad news." I said, "What's the bad news?" He goes, "Well, the bad news is that they changed the name of the show from Teenage Wasteland to That 70s Show. And the good news is that you're going on television. The show is going on Fox. And they ordered 13 episodes.
It's huge.
And I say, wait, the show's about the 70s? No idea. I was like, oh, I think this is American stress, I guess, in Wisconsin. I don't know, yeah, you know? Right. I had no idea the show was about the 70s. And then comes to find out, the show goes on for 8 years, 200 episodes, crazy. And kind of paved the way for everything I'm doing today now.
That's insane.
And then I, you know, I remember the day, like that week before I got this pilot, my mom and I were walking over to the, you know, to the 99 cent stores to get our groceries, you know. And I remember walking over it and, you know, walking a couple of miles to get back to the house with the bags to see my mom's hands, you know, really red, taking the bags. And, you know, we would rest every two blocks. We put our bags down and carry and continue. And I looked at my dad and I looked at my mom and I said, Mom, don't worry, because one day we're going to drive, you know, and one day we did. And that's just, that was the example. That was just, you say it. And you just have to do it. It's not going to come to you. You just, if you're going to say it, you have to follow it with your actions, and you have to manifest it with how much do you want it? And is it within your spirit that once you have it, can you hold it? Can you keep it? And that is only your etiquette that's going to dictate whether you're going to keep it or not. Mm. You know, so I look back on my mom and my dad. I retired both of them. And, wow. You know, the first thing I did when we got picked up on the show, I bought a house.
Wow.
And I said, we're not paying rent anymore. Because we were like 3 months late in rent, sure, when I got the pilot, you know. So that was the beginning of my career and really the American dream I was about to experience in America.
Unbelievable, man.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Crazy.
I'm so curious to know about, you know, these, how many years were you in Venezuela? 12 years, you say?
I was about almost 11 years.
11 years in Venezuela. What do you think was the biggest thing that you learned growing up there in South America that is different from the kids that grew up in U.S. or in L.A. that kind of gave you an advantage?
Yeah.
Going in with this like mindset and this belief in yourself.
For sure.
You could create whatever you wanted. What do you think was that lesson you learned that was different?
Reality. You live a reality in our countries that kids out here will just never feel. We'll have a tough time understanding empathy. Or empathy. Like, we can sympathize in our countries with opportunity. We can take advantage of opportunity. South America.
Yeah.
Specifically Venezuela. A reality that, unfortunately, most young people today can only appreciate through an Instagram post. Mm-hmm. That gave me the edge. When I came here and I saw, you got to keep in mind, our 6 o'clock news was decapitations and school buses getting sprayed by AKs and, you know, cartel movement and bombings and senators
police
getting murdered and police corruption and all that stuff. And you're talking about a crazy level of danger that affects the poorest and the richest community all at the same. And then you come to America and people are talking about, oh, another drive-by. And they're talking about like the violence in, you know, in the hoods. To me, that was like, what? This is Disneyland. We are in Disneyland. Like this, the United States is the best, is the purest place on earth. Like literally anything can happen in this place. You have an environment. You can literally choose the environment you want to be in.
Right. You can get out of the hood and be somewhere else.
That's correct. That's correct.
Or it didn't happen in Venezuela or where
no.
you were. It
was you like move three blocks away. Same thing as you block 8 blocks away if you go to a different state.
Yeah.
So I think the edge for us was that is also appreciating the best and worst of your country. And then coming over here and appreciating the best and worst of the United States.
Yeah.
You know, and I think
what do you mean we're not perfect here?
Exactly. 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 No, but I think and to elaborate a little bit more on what I mean by that is that if you can really keep your eyes open and if you can listen to your atmosphere. And if you could pay attention to what's happening in the world, you can be invincible.
Mm.
Especially if you live in this country.
Yeah.
You can absolutely achieve anything. Like I just gave you a glimpse at you know, the first 10 years of my life and literally the first 4 years of my life in this country. Mm-hmm. And in that glimpse of it, if it doesn't tell you that, like you have zero excuse. Mm. you know, I don't know what else can, you know, but I come full circle to like coming from Venezuela, knowing that right now, 20 years later or so, Venezuela is, you know, middle class people have to stand in line. Doctors, you know, professors are homeless right now. You know, they're standing in line to get a carton of milk and a bag of rice, and then they X their hands so they don't come back for a second one, and they are organized based on the last digits of your driver license and your ID, and you think about a country that, you know, that had, I mean, the richest resources and was exporting and was, you know, it's sad, you know, and you look at that and then so knowing where you come from, it's crazy important. Never forgetting where you came from is really the edge you have on anyone that may be consider a competition. And as something else I tell young people when I speak and I do speeches and stuff is, you know, competition is a state of mind. You know, if you believe in competition, look, in sports, 100%. But an athlete that wins over everyone and goes out there and plays harder than anybody else is because they know the only person they're competing with is themselves. Mm-hmm. And you've heard it and you've seen it in billboards and you see it in inspirational posts, but you should really study what that means, because the only one that holds you back is yourself.
Yeah.
I never compared myself to anyone when I got here. I was embarrassed about my accent for a second, and then I learned to find pride in it.
Yeah.
And then at that point, anything counted. But that's my edge good. Was that, you yeah. know, knowing where you come from.
We probably didn't compare yourself because there was no Instagram.
Right.
Everyone's constantly comparing their life to everyone else's life, right?
It's true.
What was the biggest lesson, the most inspirational lesson that your dad and your mom taught you growing up? That has supported you your entire life.
Yeah, I think my dad said two things that really kind of made all the difference for me. And I think that the first one was, you know, in that auditioning room before I went into the seventh show, he says, "Mio, you know, if you get it, you know, very good. If you don't get it, you're very good." Mm. It was so simple in the moment, but I've carried that, you know, through my mind throughout my career. And honestly, what it did is it made me fearless. It made me fearless to experience failure. Mm-hmm. Like so many of us put so much emphasis on winning something or achieving something or getting a job or getting a break or getting that part. Or, you know, the truth is that was one of the most substantial pieces of, you know, metaphorical lessons that I got, was that if you win, great. And if you don't win, that's awesome. You walk away with something anyways. Mm-hmm. And that's a success. It's a version of success. And I think that's what really changed my perspective. And that's why I felt like I was booking so much back to back to back. And when I went to that, you know, that audition on the 70s show, it made me so fearless that I went in there. I had nothing to lose.
Nothing. Yeah.
And then when I walked away, gaining everything. And I think that's something that I hope young people can listen and say, "Hey, wow, don't fear failure. To be honest, you should fear success." That's the thing you should fear. Failure is a consequence of maybe, you know, a chance, lack of preparation,
timing.
Mm. There's so many elements.
Yeah.
And none of those elements are personal. Except for, did you prepare? Were you not prepared enough? Did you give it your all shot? If you can walk away saying, "I gave it everything, I didn't get it," awesome, it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
But it's when you don't give it your 100% that you fear the failure. That's a fact, especially in my line of work, especially if you're an actor, if you're a musician. If you go on stage and you do a showcase, if you're doing theater, if you're doing your first commercial, whatever, you get fired, you say they let you go, they give you less lines or whatever, there may be preparation, you know? But if it's not, it's also not personal.
Right. Yeah.
I think the other thing that my dad said that made a lot of sense to me was it wasn't what he said. It was mostly the way he lives life. Hmm. You know, he laughs at a funeral. Like right. My dad finds a way to really find humor in the most dramatic moments, you know? And I learned that from him, and that also made me accept faster. It made me analyze and accept and find the positive and the bad. So seeing my dad have a great sense of humor, like even when they stole the car, you know, my dad, we're really stressed. And then like an hour later, he goes, okay, we're gonna have to buy new shoes, you know? You know, so that's like that kind of mentality is what made me feel like, oh, okay, well, you know, I can accept life and its punches and its hurdles and its disasters. Yeah. And
it's kind of like the book, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, because it's all small stuff.
Right.
It's like when you put it in perspective, it's like, okay, you know, yes, maybe something is horrible in the moment, but bigger picture, where can we find the humor or the joy, and how right. can we move forward?
That's correct.
As opposed to holding on to this pain forever, you know, or this stress or anxiety.
And it's a state of mind, right? So yeah. like, so I always tell people, and tell me what you think about this, but I always tell people, and I'm curious to see what you think about yeah. this, but I always tell people, and people in relationships and in friendships, and sometimes they have fallouts and people break, you know, they hurt each other's feelings and relationships and all that stuff. And they dwell on the things that were done, you know, and they stress and they make things really complicated. And I always think that things are going to be as complicated as you want them to be. And they're also going to be as simple as you make them to be.
Yeah.
Right? So I always feel like for how when something complicated happens, you have to remove yourself. You got to pull on the parachute and be like, well, let me look at it from bird's eye. Because, yeah. you know, because when you're in it too much and yeah. you put the blinders, I feel like the problem is way bigger than you can control.
You're consumed by it. You uh-huh. can't get out of it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I agree with that for sure. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you agree with that. That was
no, I'm believing that too. Yeah. yeah.
But it's going to be as complicated as you want it to be. Absolutely. And it's going to be as simple as you want it
it's
to be.
It's all perspective, I think.
Right.
And I think a lot of these things come down to like, being grateful for where you're at. You know, you could have been like, oh, or your dad could have been like, the car is gone. Someone stole it. We lost this money. Now we're going to have to struggle. He could look at the negatives that come from it, or he could say, oh, we get to buy new shoes and we get to lose a couple extra pounds. Right. I get to have right. some exercise.
Right, right.
Now I get to see the world in a different way and I don't have to be in traffic all day long with mm-hmm. like jerks who are screaming mm-hmm. or... I'm going to be safer now because I don't have to deal with LA traffic. You know, right. It's all perspective and gratitude, I think. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's any way how we look at it.
Correct. Yeah.
And what about your mom? Biggest lesson from your mom?
To get down from there. To get down from there because I got hurt every time.
Get down from that tree.
Get down from there. Get down from there every time. Because she knew I was going to get hurt.
That's funny.
You know? And this is why I think it's one of the best words of advice I've ever gotten. It's because there are certain things you know you're pushing. There's certain things you just know mm-hmm. you're trying to get away with. And when she told me, get down from there, it was this like haunting voice. It was like, get down from there. You're going to get hurt.
Right.
And I got hurt every time.
Really?
I got hurt every time. And I think it's like in the times that I climbed the tree, or the times that I push the envelope on whatever subject or category of the conversation, I pushed it without knowing whether I was going to win or not. Mm. Or I pushed it without actually really knowing whether I was right or wrong. So knowing that you have this voice in your head that says, get down from there, which came from my mother. Most of us have this voice that uh-huh. either tells us either yes or no, you know? My mom just kind of set a precedent that she just knew better than me.
Yeah.
And FYI, your parents are always and will always be way smarter than you, no matter how smart you think you are. Mm-hmm. Period. They're always going to have 30 years on you, and you can never get to 30 years yeah. or 40 years of experience. So your parents will always be smarter than you. Mm-hmm. And if you think your parents don't relate to you because they don't understand what you're going through.
They do.
You're so wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you got to remember they were teenagers too.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to make. But also, if your dad said you should be afraid of going to this audition, you shouldn't listen to him.
Right.
He may have some predestined yeah. Fears of his own failures and be like, I don't want you to get hurt. So mm-hmm. I don't even think you should go do it. Right. Or you're probably not going to achieve these dreams because, so don't get your hopes up.
That's right.
So I think you need to be discerning sometimes of what your parents say. Now, if you're getting hurt every single time, and you should just listen.
Correct.
But if it's their fears trying to put on you, I don't think that's necessarily the case. But
no, I agree. I mean, look, that's the upside. I mean, what I want to come across with my mom saying that is that you know, when you have the support of your parents, you know, you should have your heart open. And they supported me through everything I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. They never limited me. They never told me I couldn't do.
When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game, or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of body plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all 4.5-inch body plants are on sale through May 5th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
But, you know, but there is families, man. There are families. And I tell you, it happened in my family. I had family members. I had uncles who were telling my dad, what is your kid doing? He's wasting his life. My kid is honors in mathematics.
Right.
My mom was like, well, what is he going to do with that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I had certain aunts from my mom's side that would be like, my kid just graduated with honors in something, something, something. And my mom would be like, oh, well, he just did another play. And yeah, and he was very funny. And so, but, you know, but my parents, you know, were pretty cool with that. But but you have to be aware that even sometimes your family, will be the problem.
Yeah.
You know, but you have to believe in yourself, you know, in order for you to identify that moment too.
Yeah. Now the 70s show was like the big hit for you, starting out. And how many years was that for?
We did 8 years and we did 200 episodes.
Unbelievable. Yeah. 8 years. You're making more money than you ever thought you're probably going to make. You have this massive platform. You have this huge audience that's watching you. What were the big lessons you learned over those 8 years? How did you stay grounded when all the attention of you being amazing and everyone watching and the biggest show and all this celebrity and dating all the big girls or whatever in the world? Not big girls.
But no, I love big girls. Just go on the record.
Nothing wrong with that. How did you stay? What are the biggest lessons over those 8 years, and how did you stay grounded?
You know, I was very lucky because the cast of that 70s show, Ashton Kutcher, Topher Grace, Danny Masterson, Laura Prepon, Mila Kunis, Kurtwood Smith, you know, Deborah Jo Rupp, and the creators of the show, Bonnie and Terry Turner and Mark Brazil, and the producers, Tom Warner and Marcy Carsey, and Peter Roth, the president of Fox at the time, they were great role models, and they gave us really early advice that really kind of helped us stay grounded, you know. But there was a moment, there was a window of my life where I thought I had to do certain things because those certain things were what defined an actor in success.
Like what?
Like going out a little too much.
Partying.
You know, like, no, you know, yeah, going to the places you're going to get photographed for no reason, you know, you know, things like that. And like, and then only for like 1 year, I hung out with people that I really, like, I had no interest and had no, relativity with. Mm-hmm. Like, we couldn't relate. We didn't see things the same way. But when the loud, when the music is loud, you kind of drown all that out, and then you just kind of think that that's a real friendship.
Yeah.
I had to do a real inventory in my life to understand that I had bigger purpose, and that I that my ambition was bigger than just being out at a club all the time.
Yeah.
I enjoy celebrating my successes. So if you ever see me out, it's because something awesome just happened. Yeah. And something, I closed a monster deal or something like that, and
celebrating.
And I'm celebrating. But the days of me just randomly going out for a run, that's just, that hasn't happened. It's eight years, nine years or so. I think that's something that really helped me get centered and get some of that youth back, you know. And I think when you're young, you should allow yourself to go out there and experiment and do what you got to do. But based on the road and what I wanted to achieve, I needed to make certain changes. But the cast of the 70s show, we held each other down, right? We never had to hang out with anyone else because we thought they were cool. In the most humble terms, I can say we were the coolest.
Right, right.
And we just
hang out with,
we're going to hang out with this cool in this crowd, you know. And the reason why I say that is because we were real people that just so happened to get an extraordinary job. Mm. And think about the generation before Dawson's Creek and the 70s show. Yeah. And the generation after.
Oh, man.
That moment in time.
The reality shows, the...
Yeah, before that hit, and right as soon as Seinfeld was leaving the air, there were some new kids in town. And I remember it was the cast of Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
And it was the cast of that 70s show. Mm. Merrill's Place and Anna Tuerno were having their last seasons.
Yep.
And it was back in 1998, between 1998 and 2006.
Wow.
We were real people that had extraordinary jobs. And I'm talking, you know, Justin Timberlake, Jessica Biel, Jessica Alba, you know, Ashton, the whole cast I just mentioned. By the way, Jamie Foxx, Mark Wahlberg, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire, real people that you talk to and you feel connected to. It was a very, very unique country club.
Yeah.
And we'll never have that moment again, you know. Yeah. But I got to tell you, that really also helped. Because those people had no problem telling you, hey, man, you don't got to do that. You know, you should hang out over here instead.
Right.
You know.
Don't do that stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of like your mom. Get down.
Yeah. Okay, hey, man, get down from there. Get down from there. Yeah. So I think that helped. That truly helped.
Cool.
You know, the dynamic that we had back then really helped. And you look at now, I'm 37 years old. Mm. And from 17 years old to 37, the fact that all of us are still here swinging as hard as we did and doing absolutely anything we want to do when we want to do it, and the world and the studios and the Hollywood and the fans are still welcome us is like, I don't even know what it's the biggest blessing we could ever count.
Amazing. Who inspired you the most from that show? Maybe from a moment or from the entire experience or something they did or said.
You know, from the cast or show?
Yeah.
You know, we inspire one another. You know, we kind of held each other up, you know, and I think it was how real we were, you know. I do have to say that Danny Masterson really said a really great, you know, he'd been in the game longer than us at the time. He'd done Roseanne and Sybil that, and he was already in that company for a while. And, you know, he kind of showed us a couple of places that we could hang out and stay out of trouble. And we would go to, you know, every Friday night after the show, we would go to this bar called Le Poubelle on Franklin. And we just sit outside,
chill,
fresh air, chill, talk and laugh. And that was fun. So Danny kind of set it a good tone for all of us. He was never in the scene. You know, we kind of created our own, bubble. And he started that, you know. And then after that, I think, you know, Ashton, Danny, and I became best friends. And we never let it one do something that, you know, would be jeopardizing to anyone. I think that's one thing I think Ashton, Danny, and I did for one another. And they really helped me understand is that I didn't have to do anything based on any other perception or assumption that I could just be, you know.
Yeah. Do you have any regrets from anything in that show?
No, I don't regret. I tell you, I don't regret anything. I appreciate every mistake. Regretting mistakes is a waste of time.
Yeah.
You know, you got to embrace the mistakes. you know, there was times in my life where I felt things and have made mistakes, you know, and misjudge certain things that I did or said, that really cost me a lot of pain and a lot of sadness. But you know, I also appreciated that lesson because it made me a better man, a better friend, and realized that I had to make some quick changes if I was going to really still be around at 37.
Now, you had this massive hit for 8 years that was all over the place. What did you do after that to, I mean, was it a challenge afterwards to, I guess, reinvent yourself and not just be known as this one character? Mm-hmm. I've had a few actors on who were on massive shows, big stars, and then they said for 2 years afterwards, they were like, I can't even get in a room because I'm so typecasted as this character, and people won't even let me come read.
Right.
And they're just like, the money's going down. They're attached to this old show.
Yeah.
They don't know how to move forward. Did you have that challenge? How did you reinvent yourself? And what advice would you give to others?
Well, I learned really strong lessons from the sitcoms of the 80s and the early 90s. You know, I mentioned the cast of Dawson's Creek and the cast of 70s Show. I feel like, again, we were in this moment in time where for the first time, the film studios were looking at this group of kids as real estate. Like, what if we get, you know, James Randervic to be in Varsity Blues? What if we get Ashton to be in, you know, whatever movies he did, right? And what if you got Wilmer and Summer Catch and, you know, and Unaccompanied Minors and all the early things that I did? Same thing with the rest, you know, Katie Holmes and Joshua Jackson, you know, like at that time that we were given an opportunity to kind of prove ourselves for more than a TV actor.
Yeah.
Because at the time, the perception was that if you were a TV actor, you did TV.
Yeah.
If you did movies, you did movies. If you were in the category of supporting characters like a Fez on That 70s Show, you were destined to never work again. Okay.
Yeah.
Somehow you're supposed to get stuck.
Yep.
You're supposed to just be like forever.
You're
like
the Karate Kid. You're the Karate Kid forever, right?
Like you're literally gonna be that. Yeah. Right. But I think that I thank Shani Rosen's wife over at UTA and my whole team, my management team at the time too. Shani and Nancy Gates and Tracy Jacobs at the time, and they saw me for so much more. And they saw me for so much more than, I really believed in myself, but they had to teach me to believe that I could be everything else I wanted to be, right?
Producer.
Yeah.
Director.
Yes.
Whatever, you entrepreneur.
Can, yes.
Whatever.
You can do, you
singer,
can do anything.
Dancer, that, anything.
Everything. Yeah. Everything. If I had the talent, then we should be using it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the philosophy.
Yeah.
And, I also have to thank a few people for that transition because it was a slow burn. We were still on the 70s Show when I was going out and doing, you know, did Summer Catch with Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard. And then I went and did Party Monster with Randy and Fenton over at World of Wondered. And that was my first, you know, crazy, dark, underground movie. That was a Sundance darling who's open, you know, Pride Festival and it was the life of Michael Alec in New York City, and and I got to perform with, you know, Seth Green and Macaulay Culkin's return film and Marilyn Manson and Dylan McDermott and Chloe Sevigny, and you had, I mean, to be given an opportunity to do a movie that was so raw and so and it became such a cult, that was really important to me. So I started doing things that we show the industry, not so much like the masses, right? Like, unfortunately, the masses only see me maybe in Summer Catch and maybe 70s Show, and maybe Unaccompanied Minors, perhaps, because that was a big studio movie too.
But in the industry, everyone's seeing it.
Right. So the industry was seeing Party Monster. They were seeing, and Fast Food Nation. Mm-hmm. Fast Food Nation was one of the biggest moments in my career. Even
is this
though
the documentary, what am I thinking?
No, the film by Richard Linklater.
I'm thinking Super Size Me.
Yeah, you're thinking Super Size Me. Yes. Yeah. So back in 2004, I was 24 years old. I have a meeting with Richard Linklater. And Richard Linklater is doing a movie by the book, you know, from Eric Schlosser, Fast Food Nation. And it's going to be like the traffic of activism.
Right.
And he's putting together a ridiculous cast. And I was privileged to meet with him and tell him, hey, I'm an immigrant. I can relate to the story. I relate to what it is, coming to America, taking jobs and doing whatever. That movie took me to Cannes Film Festival, standing next to Ethan Hawke and Greg Kinnear and Patricia Arquette and, you know, Bruce Willis and, you know, and be looked at as an actor. My entire role was in Spanish. I played an undocumented worker that crosses the border with his family and takes a job at a slaughterhouse.
Wow.
And then Richard Linklater and Eric Schlosser said, hey, some young people are listening and people are giving some attention right now. You have an opportunity to say things that matter. And I said, me? Well, actors are not supposed to get involved in politics. He goes, yeah, but politics are human issues. And that's what changed everything for me. So in 2005, you know, I go in front of Congress and talk about, you know, immigrant workers and all that, because Richard Linklater and Eric Schlosser were the ones who mentored me to do that.
Wow.
And that's when I started, that's when I became an activist back in 2005.
Wow.
That's when I said, you know what, I have a responsibility with every character, I have a responsibility with everything I say. You know, that's when things drastically changed and slowed down for me.
Slowed down in terms of the acting world or in terms of...
No, I slowed down in like life.
Oh,
I was going around. Yeah. Like not even the party. Like I was just trying to do
everything,
you know? And I was like, whoa, let's be more strategic about this, you know? And, but it was thanks to my agency at the time and all we had a great partnership.
Yeah.
Shani is my queen. She's everything. Shani Rosenzweig is the best. And she was the one that was like, take your time, take a deep breath, you know? And that moment in time was defining for my transition, you know. And every character I did during the time of the 70s show in the movies was telling the industry, oh, wait a minute, he's not Fez. He's not Fez. He's not Fez. Whoa, I didn't think you could do an entire character in Spanish. Well, he's playing a gangster in this Spike Lee thing. Or we're like,
right.
You know, so all these things are happening where the industry took notice that at any minute now, I could have a character in any of these things, you know. And so it really opened the doors. And, you know, I remember another pivotal point for me when I was doing a 70s show. I was doing Handy Manny. I was doing Your Mama. And I just finished, and Fast Food Nation, I just premiered in Cannes. And, you know, Entertainment Weekly had honored me with 6 pages, The Arrival of Wilmert. And it was like this thing. And I had this anxiety. We got to do something. What is the next thing? What's the next thing? We got to do the next thing. What's the next thing? And my agents kind of slowed me down. He goes, that's a lot.
6 days or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, you only have 7 days, and I was doing, you know, 7 days. So during the weekdays, I would rehearse 70's show. In the afternoons, I would do Handy Manny.
Shoot.
And on the weekends, I would shoot Your Mama on MTV. And then on my weeks off, I would shoot Fast Food Nation.
Wow.
And or another movie. So literally, I was addicted to how much more can I do, you know? And it was consuming me, and I was sick every 3 weeks, and I was, you know, I had bags under my eyes, and I still found time to actually go out and meet my friends and drink a little, you know.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really balanced in the approach, you know.
Yeah.
So Tracy Jacobs and Shani Rosenzweig say, hey, we need you to meet somebody. I go, ooh, okay, where are you going? They take me over to Disney Studios, and we walk in to this big soundstage. And I just reminded this actor I'm going to mention of this story. But walk into the soundstage, and there's this huge ship. Huge ship. And I go, whoa, where are we? We walk out. There's pirates everywhere. I go, wait a minute. Where are we? So Tracy represents Johnny Depp.
Uh-huh.
And she wanted me to meet with Johnny. Never met in my life.
Pirates everywhere.
I am a fanatic of Johnny Depp.
Really?
Because I relate to him and how fearless we are when it comes to creating characters, right? Like, I'll create something that's so far removed from who I am, and people are like, who is this guy, right? And he's perfected that, and you know, he's a pioneer of that.
Yeah.
So we go into his trailer, and we sit down, and, you know, he's playing a little music.
Is he a full character or no?
In full Jack Sparrow. Okay?
Does he speak like a normal human or like Jack Sparrow?
No, he's speaking like a human, like, you know. But, you know, he still has the lingo. Oh, you know? Yeah. So Wilmer, come on, Rich, welcome. how was it, my friend? And so we're talking, and she just wanted us to kind of meet. She goes, I think you guys should, you know, you could talk. You have some things in common. And
yeah.
he shared some of the struggles in his early career, how like people sort of only wanted to see him at certain things, but he wanted to be Scissorhands, you know? And I started talking to him about, you know, other things like, you know, well, here's what I'm doing. I'm doing this and the animated and the, your mom on TV and this and whatever, blah, blah. But I feel like what's the next thing? Like I got to get the next thing. Mm. And I just get this anxiety that I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm having a moment right now. And like we're gathering heat. I feel like we got to keep fueling the fire and keep the steam going, you know, and so the train keeps going fast, you know, and I'm talking like this. And he's smiling and he looks at Tracy and then he smiles back and he goes, Wilmer, let me ask you a simple question. I go, what? Okay. He goes,
at Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the hurry? Wait. What? What's the hurry? Why are you in such a hurry? And it changed everything in me. Because I knew exactly what he was telling me. Because life is a marathon. If you make it a spring, you may not make it. And then I realized I just need to take my time. And because of that advice, I'm a 37 years old, still swinging.
You're not dead.
I'm not dead. And then he asked me, what kind of actor do you want to be? Whoa. Nobody's asked me that before. Mm. Do you want to do everything? Or do you want to do every character you want to do? If you want to do every character you want to do, then you want to say no to everything you don't want to do. Because if you're in this hurry, you're going to do things you don't want to do. And it just like...
That's powerful.
It was the recipe. It was a recipe for the like-minded who can believe in themselves and who could take a deep breath and say, it's going to happen when it happens. And when it happens, I'm going to love that moment.
Yeah.
And that's how it happened. And that's one of the things that really, really changed my life. It was, what was the hurry? Mm. If you make it a spring, you're not going to make a marathon. You know, and what kind of actor do I want to be? How do I want to be remembered? Really, I asked myself. And, you know, Fast Food Nation was exactly what I wanted to be remembered for. Mm. What he stand for, what he said, you know, who he defended, who I played, the person, the real human being I played in Fast Food Nation is who I wanted to pay respects and honored in every character I did after that. Mm. And if it was entertaining, it was like I play a villain, then I was like, it has to be the most awesome villain that you want to be, you know? And then after that, I was able to take a big break, and I took about a six-year break from television.
Man, wow.
I took a six-year break from television and started producing, started directing, started developing, started my production company, and focused on making Handy Manny one of the most, you know, the biggest show. And... because he was helping people and because families were so proud of having this little bilingual character teach, they're either Caucasian or African-American or Asian or you know, or everybody else that will watch the show of any ethnicity to be proud of appreciating a second language, appreciating your culture, never forgetting your roots. And I was like, that's what I want to do. And then in those 6 years, I became an activist. And Rosario Dawson and I, you know, were part of the whole wave of Voto Latino. Started with the census, then went registering people to vote. Then after that, it morphed into more activism and starting, you know, programs like Ready to Lead for the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, which was a college readiness program for minorities so they understand what's out there and how they can actually make college obtainable. And then, you know, after school programs, and I just kind of got addicted to touching people and having them... you know, see a light that I saw at one point. And then eventually from then on, you know, I started working with President Obama and on immigration reform. And working with him was one of the proudest moments of my life, you know. And then from then on, you know, we went on to create other things. And today, we, you know, America Ferrera and I created Hardness.space. You know, you can go check it out. And it's really an organization that kind of puts together all the community leaders and the movements of the human rights, and having them not only commute with one another, but share each other's strengths and weaknesses, and then have a second category of people that have certain resources, whether it's filmmaking or funding or you know, certain ideas or tech or marketing, to leverage that and have them all be in the same room and help one another move the needle when it comes to defending what the country should be about. And Hardness is something that's one of my proudest, you know, things that I co-founded as well. But in those 6 years, I became fearless to defend my family, my Latino family, my parents who are immigrants, and said that I came from an immigrant family who came fearlessly to America and built things. And then, you know, from then on, in those same years, I went and traveled. I went to Iraq, Afghanistan, Germany, Greenland, you know, South mm-hmm. Korea, visiting the troops and, you know, and really getting to know the men and women who fight for our freedom and, mm-hmm. and for the flag that we celebrate and the American dream that we all live. And since that moment when I met, you know, Johnny, and then getting the words of advice from my agents and remembering what my parents told me, in that window, I perfected the man I wanted to be.
Wow.
And became exactly who I am right now, and who won't change, but only learns. And
who are you now?
Well, today, I look myself in the mirror and I say, you are Wilmer Valderrama. And you know, what does that mean to you, Wilmer? That means someone that, is fearless, someone that believes that anything is possible, and the only thing impossible is what you told yourself was going to be. And honestly, just a proud, you know, a proud son, you know, a proud of his parents and proud of the sacrifice. But, you know, humbly so, I just think, you know, I've become exactly the person that I would look up to if I was Wilmer.
Mm. That's cool.
And again, I only say it in the most humble terms. That only means so much right. to me. Doesn't mean anything to anybody else. But I've become exactly the person that Wilmer Valderrama would look up to. Mm. And that's the only person I want to be.
That's cool.
You know, so when I think back at all those years and all those mistakes and all those, you know, lessons, mm-hmm. It's hard to regret anything, you know.
Yeah,
it's great, man. Because it's giving me the spirit that makes me live life today, for sure.
It's amazing, man. And in the last 20 years, you've created so much. What's the vision that you have or the dream you have moving forward?
You know, it's simple now. I mean, it's simple is to continue to do things I like. It really is simple. You know, if you asked me this 10 years ago, I would say an empire.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to build an empire. And now, to me, the empire I have is only as influential as the people I surround myself with, and the reach and the change and the impact that it has on people and on society. And unity has become really the spirit of that empire. Mm. It's not about how much can I achieve, it's how much can we do. It's never, I mean, I learned very quickly that I dream very slow, very small, but we dream very big.
Yeah.
You know, I also, you know, learned that the vision for what's next, it's about creating a seed, divorcing it, emptying your pockets and the table, everybody around the table empty their pockets, and then build a Lego house from there. Mm. That's it. That is, to me, the recipe for success today and for the future, is understanding you have weaknesses, and those weaknesses are going to be somebody else's strength. So you have to never assume that weakness you're going to make a strength, because if you only focus on your strength and you allow somebody else to share their strength with you, you both just win.
Mm, that is strong.
And I was a one person band for like almost 10 years of my life.
Tried to do it all yourself.
Tried to do it all myself. And I got some things done, but not at the impact that I thought it would be. Because it wasn't about the credit and it wasn't about the ego. It was about the like, no, I can do this, right? But a real leader empowers, right? A real leader inspires. And that empowerment and inspiration turns things into reality. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not you did it and you came and assembled this table. It's not that somebody had to cut this wood. Mm-hmm. You don't cut wood. You're not a carpenter.
No.
You don't make legs of steel either, no. Right? But in order to build this table, I got to get us all together. Mm-hmm. You're the carpenter. You build the steel. But I got the screws and I know exactly how we're going to angle it.
Right.
And now we all can successfully, you know, share this table together.
Yeah.
And everybody wins.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's my vision is to continue to share the success that I build with the people that I respect and love so much that I happen to be sharing my everyday with right now. And having a heart open to welcome everybody else to say, hey, man, what else can we build together, you know?
Mm, that's powerful. You know when the interview goes well when I don't ask any of the questions that I have here for you.
So
it just flows.
My upbringing too. I could have trimmed that a little bit more.
I loved it, man. I've got three final questions. I've got a lot of questions for you, but I want to kind of bring it together with three final ones. The first one is called the Three Truths. Three Truths. So if this was the last day for you, and every
defined last day,
you're dead tomorrow, right? But you, or it's many years from now, and it's your last day, and you've created everything you've wanted to create. You've done it all. Every dream you've achieved, every person you wanted to meet, you made it happen. You had multiple hang sessions with Johnny Depp, and your life is complete. You learned all the lessons you needed to learn. But for whatever reason, all the creations that you had out in the world, no one has access to anymore. So they can't watch any shows or movies or anything that you've ever created. They don't have access to. But you have a piece of paper and a pen, and you get to write down the three truths, three things, lessons, truths that you would share with the world. And that's all they would have to remember you by, these three lessons.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your three truths?
I mean, very simple for me. I live by them, and I just hope I can pass this on to my children as well. Number one is what my dad said to me. You know, I think it's, you know, if you win, great. If you didn't, awesome, right? Mm-hmm. Number two, I think that, you know, never live life with the anxiety that you're not going to achieve. Right. So what's the hurry? Right. Take your time in building a foundation that's not going to be broken. Right.
Yeah.
Take your time. I think that's number two. Take your time and enjoy the time. Right. Mm-hmm. Take your time and enjoy that time. It's a moment that we have. Right. The last one is something that Robin Williams, I had the privilege of asking him for advice. Robin Williams said to me, he came to the Seto 70 show visiting Kurtwood Smith because they've done Dead Poets Society. And I said, you know, at like 19 years old, I said, hey, Mr. Williams. He goes, call me Robin. And he was already on, you know. I said, okay, Robin, a word of advice for a young buck like me, man. If I look up to all your comedy and all that stuff. And he said to me, okay, word of advice. He gave me two, but I'm going to give you the one that I want on that list, right? Mm-hmm. So he said, always remember and never forget that it's supposed to be fun. And that set it a tone for the guideline. Mm. If it wasn't fun, I was doing something wrong.
Yeah.
If it wasn't fun, I wasn't prepared enough. If it wasn't fun, I'm probably at the wrong place. I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
But everything is supposed to be fun. I apply it to my acting. If I'm not enjoying this character, I'm not doing something right, or this is not this. I'm not at the right place where I'm supposed to be. So I would say those are the three things. You know, the last one to me is one of the most important ones because we forget to have fun when we work for our goals, you know. Mm-hmm. We sometimes feel like we have to sacrifice and we have to put ourselves through pain and that we have to be sore in the morning. Mm-hmm. But you have to understand that you have time. Mm-hmm. That no matter the outcome, you're going to win anyways, right, as long as you make it fun.
Yeah. What was the second thing you said?
The second thing was about fans. He said to me, He said, so when you meet your fans, because you're going to have fans, they're going to have 2 or 3 minutes of your time for the rest of their life. What 2 or 3 minutes do you want them to walk away with? I never have a bad day in front of my fans. My fans come up. They want to say hi. Take a deep breath. If I'm going through something,
you smile.
If I'm stressed, I want to give them the same energy they give me. When they give me, they have this, when their eyes, when they meet me for the first time, sometimes there's tears, sometimes there's laughter, sometimes they go into this place where they remember all these characters, or they listen to all the quotes that I put on Instagram or Twitter and all that, and they quote me back and they say that you've helped me so much, you know, the things that you said really helped me while I was getting through this hard time, or even as far as saying, like, you know, today I didn't think about harming myself because you made me smile today. And all these things have to be met with the same compassion and the same love they give me. And, you know, if all my fellow actors and musicians are listening to this, it's a lot easier to give a smile in the moment. It's a lot easier to take 3 minutes than hide and elaborately not connect with your people. So to me, that's you know, that's very, very important to me, you know. Yeah. 2 or 3 minutes, yes, of course. Picture, no problem. What do you want me to sign? Of course. What do you want to tell me? This and this and this. Great. Keep digging.
Yeah.
Keep climbing.
Thanks for saying hi. And
yeah. See you later. I appreciate you saying hi. That's the only, that's the only way. That's the way I finish every encounter. Thank you for saying hi. I appreciate you coming up.
Yeah.
That's cool. I know not everyone's like that, but but I will say that's my philosophy.
That's cool, man. Well, I want to acknowledge you for a moment, Wilmer, for opening your heart and for listening to the mentors that were there before you who gave you great advice, but also making a massive impact on so many people, not only for your work as an actor, but really what it looks like now is mostly your activists, your work and trying to make an impact back in the world with other things that aren't related to acting. And I think that's what's going to be most remembered about you is how you made an impact for people that didn't have the voice. And you using your voice for something more than just fame or recognition or money, but using it to really make a difference in people. So I want to acknowledge you for
thank you, man.
Constantly
that.
Reinventing yourself, staying grounded, because I didn't know you were this grounded of a human, and having such an open heart for all of us to witness it. So
thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm blessed that I was able to
Man.
You know, share my thoughts with you and pay tribute to the people that really, really helped me.
Yeah.
To be honest, it's about my parents, really.
Yeah.
But thank you. Thank you for having me, man.
Of course. Before I ask the final question, where can we connect with you online? What do you want us to take action on? Website, social media?
Yeah,
sure. What do you spend time on?
Sure. So, you know, the predictable ones, you know, I'm on Twitter. I'm at W Valderrama. On Instagram, I'm Wilmer Valderrama. And on Facebook, the same thing, Wilmer Valderrama. There's a couple of places that you want to know more about different things in activism. I think that, you know, Voto Latino is a good one if you like voting registration. And
what is it?
VotoLatino.org.
Voto Latino.
Yeah. And the other one, which is America for Us and Ron Pierce Williams, in my organization, is called Hardness. Hardness is quickly growing into something that we're going to be very proud of as a community, I think. And I think you can go to hardness.space. For this, and just to get more information on that, that'd be cool. Yeah. Other than that, I think I welcome you to kind of follow me on social media and stuff. I'm silly at times.
Where do you hang out the most? What do you like the most right now?
I'm actually hovering a lot on Instagram.
Yeah. Okay.
I get lost on Instagram a lot. On Twitter, I tend to, you know, promote a little bit more and then also do some inspirational quotes and stuff. If you want inspirational stuff, I post it there. I hope it's inspirational. Yeah. But I think Instagram and Facebook are going to be my most elaborate. You know, I blog a lot. I go live a lot and do a lot of story stuff. Dude. Cool, it's just cool.
Cool, man. Final questions. What's your definition of greatness?
What's my definition of greatness? Oof. That's a loaded question. But my definition of greatness, but I think greatness is the ability to only live within your strength and making that your lifestyle. If you can live within your strength and not lie to yourself that you can do other things you can't, that's one thing I feel like it's greatness. You can make something truly great if you just execute within your strength. And I think that's the definition of greatness. Stay within your strength, because if you're within your strength, it's always going to be fun, you know? And that strength will perfect your practice. And when you perfect your practice, you achieve greatness.
Wilmer, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, bud. Appreciate having me, man.
It's great. There you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this one. I loved connecting with Wilmer and getting to hear more about his story and just being in his presence for, you know, an hour during this interview really showed me who he was. He opened his heart. He was so open and giving and present. And I just love when people really connect and take the time. You know, he's got a lot going on, a lot of different businesses and shows that he's running. And for him to share his story so openly just really... I really appreciate that. So if you guys enjoyed this and it resonated in any way, then go ahead and tag your Instagram stories with a screenshot of this podcast episode and tag me at Lewis Howes and at Wilmer Valderrama and post it on Twitter. Again, the link is lewishowes.com/514. Let a couple friends know about this episode. We want to get more people connecting to the message of greatness, learning the tools, the inspiring stories to help everyone get to the next step. Reach bigger results, feel deeper, have a more open heart, connect to the human race on a bigger level. That's what this is all about, striving for greatness in our own unique way. If you enjoyed this, again, share it out with your friends, leave a review over on iTunes. Just search the School of Greatness podcast on your iTunes app or on your podcast app on your phones. And as always, you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's toilet bowl cleaner disinfects both the toilet brush and bowl for 2-in-1 disinfection, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.